Thank you so much, Dr. Louie. It's a real privilege to be here. Thank you all for joining us. All right. I have nothing to disclose here. Hang on. We're just going to... Are we not clicking forward?
Arrows.
Okay, page 10. But I do want to take a minute to talk about the Children's Dental Health Project. In addition to the work that we do around health care reform, that was passage of dental provisions in the ACA, and now, of course, implementation in the ACA, we separately have the privilege to work on a cooperative agreement with CDC to provide tools, training, and resources to state oral health programs. Just another disclosure about our cooperative agreement, and also just a statement regarding the lobbying provisions, which now affect also state government lobbying. I think Dr. Louie went over these presentation objectives, so I'll skip through that. And also some of the resources described, we'll just quickly go through. That's what we're going to be talking about. So let me start right away with the oral health policy assessment tool. The purpose and the audience for this tool are to assist state oral health programs, coalitions, and partners with a process for aggregating stakeholder input on systems and policy-related public health priorities for oral health. That's a mouthful, but it is a structured process. If you want to sort of frame it, you think of a SWOT analysis with an extra turbocharge here. Users have available a guide, and we're actually in the process of updating that right now with background and worksheets for this two-part tool. And then I'm going to also talk in more detail about a template that we have to monitor policies. Model use of this tool occurs when organizers use the planning templates, not because CDHP created such great ones, but they've been tested, vetted, and worked through with the state programs, and it's based on their advice we know kind of what templates work best. That's part of the guidebook. We recommend an ad hoc committee to identify invitees to come to the policy tool process. Really important to have a broad-based group. If you have one particular type of group, that the inputs are going to be exactly the same as the outputs from that group relating only to them. We did do a model pilot project in Colorado where we actually increased the diversity and the base of participation in a coalition through the Multicultural Oral Health Alliance. And if people are interested in looking at how that pilot was developed, we also were able then to invite the Office of Disparities and bring in people to kind of crosswalk data, which was very new and different. So that's one way of going about it. The policy tracker, again, I'll talk about that a little bit more in detail, is very helpful prior to the policy tool process. We've got some other ideas about how the structure of this should be done. We suggest a facilitated half-day process. The interesting thing is, and I know folks, we have veterans in this room who've worked with the tool in large groups. In Maryland's Oral Health Summit, we did it with over 100 people. Regardless of the number of people, we still suggest a half-day process. Our experienced facilitator for several years, Dr. Lynn Mowden, really experimented with changing the length of time, and you get the maximum bang for the buck if you do it in about a half day, suggested. The key to this is that every stakeholder contributes. That's how the process works. It's designed to have everybody make a contribution. Then the input is aggregated through numerical scoring, which is very fun and keeps people engaged in the process. Five priority problems are matched with solutions at the very beginning in part one and then tested for feasibility. The first part of this, the original design of this was predicated on a process for priority setting that was used in developing countries. Very simple. The idea is you just get people together and start articulating needs. The feasibility part was added based on the research of Dr. John Kingdom. His name comes up at conferences regularly. He sort of looked at what happens and how things get on the policy agenda. So we incorporated some of the information from him to also test things in the real world. An action plan is reviewed. And then finally, surveys and a facilitator's report are created. So basically, people have take-home information about the experience, and also we can compare state to state based on evaluator surveys and so forth. We've done this for more than 20 states. People have ideas about how it can be improved. Bob Eisman sent a very thoughtful, a member of our audience today, sent a very thoughtful memo about ways he thought things could be tweaked. Basically, what gets high marks for this process, and they're not small things, is enhanced stakeholder communication. A lot of our dental directors say it's very, very difficult to convene people to talk about policy and priorities without a process like this. Transparency. Coalitions really like the idea of a process that everybody understands what's happening from beginning to end. And of course, the utility then for state oral health plans, policy committee work, planning. And then lastly, the idea that we get repeatedly high marks on evaluation, that stakeholders feel satisfied that their time is being used strategically. In other words, they're not just meeting for meeting's sake. So our goal moving forward is to include work on the policy tracker, which is our little name that we're giving this, and the policy tool together, since a lot of the CDC-funded states are on their second round for tool use. But it's not only the CDC-funded states that can use this, and you can certainly speak to me about the process that we have in place for having any state oral health coalition can be working on this. And then, of course, the idea of how and why we should add the policy tracker information. So why have a policy tracker? Unlike a lot of other areas of health policy, there is no 50-state database on policies. CDC has a database for tobacco. I've actually worked on some of the early tobacco schematics, and even obesity and wellness, there are some compilations of policies, diabetes, cardiovascular. We don't have that kind of comprehensive database, nor does the National Conference of State Legislatures. But states can use a simple template that we devised, and it's been adapted beautifully by Maryland, in particular policy analyst Jerry Thuku, to track. And it actually has an added dimension where one will be able to then crosswalk not only the laws that are on the books, but also professional policies and programmatic policies. So it'll really give you a very big picture of all of the implications for the policies that happen beyond just what's on the books. Here's an example of a blank template that Maryland devised. Basically, I put in the categories on the left coming that came from the original CDC state plan index. Quite a while ago, when CDC was first working with state oral health plans, they had a very expansive list of topic areas and envisioning that states were going to start working on these things. And then the areas that we suggest professional policies, public policies, programmatic policies can be filled in. Now, Maryland's methods were they wanted something that was really user-friendly so they could organize information. And if a state has an excellent website like the Maryland General Assembly website, it's pretty easy to pull up the policies that you have if you use the keywords dental, dental health, oral, that sort of thing. Not all states have that, but there are other legal search engines that get you to that information. It's a little bit more complicated, but you can hire, you know, certainly try to get a legal intern, something like that, to work on it. It's updatable on Excel. You could also use Access for sure. And so then the questions of identifying overlap and so forth are easily resolved. Now, this is how it looks filled in. This is the area of prevention strategies, fluoridation. So you have your public policies. You've got programmatic policies, such as a memorandum of agreement, of understanding between Maryland's oral health program and Maryland's Department of Environment. And then other things that are happening so that literally now they have kind of a giant schematic of policies that affect the work that they're doing and what they've done in the past. The second resource that I'm going to talk about is FLUID. That's the FLUID Legislative User Information Database. This is an online legal and policy database available cross-linked with ilikemyteeth.com, CDC, ASTDD. You can pull it up lots of places. The idea is to be able to search case law, policies across the states, and some localities. We're building information starting with the most populous to least populous localities, municipalities. The search years ago was not so easy to do, but Municode and other legal engines make that easy to do now, and then federal actions. This is supported by CDC. It was originally a project through Hunter's CUNY School of Nursing, but we completed the database and are now managing it with American University's Washington College of Law, Health, Law, and Policy Project. They're kind of new in the health law policy analysis world, and they're really eager and doing a great job. We have a law review article that was just accepted for publication in spring 2013 issue of OWCL publication. I think this will be a very good resource. It's not advocacy. It's straight up information, not only about the history of public community water fluoridation background, but also case law, which is very, very positive on community water fluoridation, and then trends as well, such as the recent notification requirements. It goes into detail. One place, you know, you have all the citations and analysis there. So let's look at a search example. You have the scenario of where, let's say you're asked to testify, you need information and citations to respond to a question on how current fluoride concentration levels in state legislation compare with the new CDC recommended levels. That they're recommended, the final is not. I'm not sure if Dr. Preston, when that final information will be available, but it will be posted as soon as it is. The research on the fluid can provide the legal history and then the status of the CDC recommendation. So here's, if we're looking at policy, here's how you get into it. You can browse by state and then look at the administrative code and statute, and right away up pops the text. If you want to look at case law, again by state, or you can filter by case topic. And again, I can't overstate that basically it's only procedural things that have not succeeded in the courts. The court system, there are not federal challenges, but certainly anything going up has been, the courts have been very positive about community water fluoridation. So that was the end of fluid. Starting now with the third resource, a state planning resource, the state oral health comparison tool. This differs a little bit from the information that's available on the CDC website, which also pulls up plans, in that it's based on 24 categories. You can hyperlink not only to the state oral health plan, but then specific language in the oral health plan pertaining to the particular category. So if you want to look at special needs, you can pull those up really quickly. This was just updated in 2012, I had the best intern in the universe from the University of North Carolina who did a really incredible job. It provides a ready reference for cross-state comparisons, and the idea is that it will help promote the development and improvement of state oral health plans within each state. I remember our dental director in Maryland, Dr. Harry Goodman, said it became kind of a Chinese menu for looking at what they want to do when they were considering revising their oral health plan, which is a very nice description. So we're also adding to the summary analysis, which we hope to expand upon. And an example of that is, while many state plans mention at-risk or vulnerable populations in their preambles or their introductory sections, fewer raise specific oral health goals and objectives specifically related to those populations. So that's an interesting point, I think. Also, we've added a chart with provisions from the ACA that support distinct categories within the state oral health plans. Dr. Bert Edelstein, founder and chair emeritus of CDHP, actually did a paper for the Maryland Oral Health Summit that provides a lot of information linking ACA to the state oral health plans, and that's a rich history and worth looking at that. I can share that with anybody. So the last tool that I'm going to describe is brand new. We just beta tested it. It's the State Oral Health Coalition Comparison Tool. This provides original coalition source material on coalition structure, activities, and operations. We're partnering very closely with ANOC, which is the American Network of Oral Health Coalitions. This is a fairly new group. Leaders in Michigan, Kansas, and Virginia felt a strong need to communicate with one another as coalition leaders, and they started to meet at the National Oral Health Conference and in between, but they also are on their second membership survey, and that's really the basis of this web tool. What we've learned is they really, states have specifically said they need more information on what other oral health coalitions are doing, not only not to to avoid, you know, having to reinvent the wheel, but also to find out how they're reacting to things, health exchanges, all sorts of information that's of value. And they're interested in comparing and contrasting, no surprise, but they also wanted a tool that was going to be really quick and easy to research. So the conceptualist conceptualization of the comparison tool, and again, this is thanks to our CDC cooperative agreement that we could get the right IT people in, you know, translate the information from the surveys to a web interface, and we hope that's available by late 2012. We really wanted something very clean and simple and informative, and I think we're getting there. We've got a lot of feedback from folks, and we've certainly been on the ground with ANOC about this, and states have beta tested it, so I think we're pretty close. So if I have a little time, I will talk about three things that are in the pipeline. Dr. Louie, can I do that? Okay, good. Two of which will showcase at the National Oral Health Conference this spring. The first is we'll have the findings of a Sealant white paper. Dr. Mark Siegel, former Ohio Dental Director and a Sealant expert, is helping us with a white paper to look in detail at programs that have had sustained and significant sealant delivery systems. The Pew group is coming out with a dental sealant report card, and we're coordinating with them to time this about 3 to 4 weeks afterwards. They have pretty hard grading on how the states are doing with respect to a sealant. So ours is kind of a sweep up of operation to be more constructive and say, well, help to answer the question, well, what do we do? What are the states that have been able to really deliver sealants, evidence-based approaches and so forth, what are they doing and how do they do it? So we're excited about that, and Dr. Siegel's been working like a madman to get all this data together at the end, but I do think it will be a good follow-up to a report card kind of scenario. The second thing that we're doing, with the emphasis by CDC on integrating what oral health does with other area chronic disease areas, we've come up with an idea for an icebreaker tool, an icebreaker quiz, in which Oral Health Coalition folks could go to coalitions in other chronic disease areas, diabetes, heart disease, and so forth, and offer a quiz that would test oral health literacy, but also begin to raise some dialogue about how the two chronic disease areas might be thinking about working together. It was hard, you know, there was lots of discussion about integration, but sometimes it's hard to get from A to B, and this isn't rocket science, but we think it's going to be interesting. We've got some excellent state dental directors interested because they go to the diabetes coalitions all the time, and this is, they'll just ask for a few minutes at the beginning of the meeting, and we'll be able to not only pre and post test in terms of the actual oral health literacy that these coalition folks have, but then also have an opportunity to refine and work on the questions. I was just at the previous session, as I know Dr. Pressman was, and I talked to Dr. Gina Thornton Evans, about really getting some expert periodontal data-driven support for the questions, because it's a tricky area, and you don't want to understate or overstate what the oral systemic relationships are. So I think if we have a real expert advisor, that will be very, very helpful. The last thing that won't be at NOHC, but I wanted to just mention, is we're working with Dr. Jay Kumar in New York State on a computer simulation to look at ECC interventions and the question of benefits and cost savings to Medicaid. He has excellent data, and we've had a model that we published in Preventing Chronic Disease that we worked with Colorado. Theirs was more for program planning. Dr. Kumar, they're in the middle of major Medicaid redesign, and their interest is really looking at how we can further work on describing both benefits to Medicaid children and cost savings involved with some of these ECC interventions. So we have a team, we have an MIT-trained systems dynamic modeler, Dr. Edelstein, Jay Kumar, and some other folks were working on that. And again, this is thanks to the CDC cooperative agreement that we're able to move forward with this kind of cutting-edge area of computer simulations. Diabetes and cardiovascular have all done these kinds of simulations, and we're forging ahead. As complicated as it is, we think this one will be particularly fruitful, in large part because of the really excellent data that Dr. Kumar has. So again, I thank you so much, and please feel free to talk to anybody at CDHP about these tools, but you can call me or email, and I'd be happy to share more. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Bev. Thank you, Marcy. Great, great presentations. We have some time for Q&A, and the floor is open. Shanka? Can I?
I may not be clear on my question.
Let me paraphrase, and you tell me if I'm accurate. You're talking about really two cultural entities, one coalitions and, let's say, the other state government. And as our panelists have been involved in using these tools and taking a look at each of these cultures, have they identified some trends and... does that capture it, Tashanka? Who would like to respond?
I think we have examples of leaders, coalition leaders, state oral health directors who've worked marvelously to figure out the interface and to support each other. I think in some states it's become a little bit less easy for them to do that. Not, I think they'll get there, but I do understand what you're saying, because as the coalitions build up more steam, exactly, and have more of a responsibility, also because of the current, the way the structure is in terms of lobbying, they now become the lobbyists and need to be very careful and set up how they're structuring that if they intend to do that. There has to be a very clear demarcation. Is that the best way to put it? Dr. Preston. So I do think there are complexities, but it really, I think it goes to skills building and leadership. There should be a way for leaders in both to be able to be collaborative and to respect each other's domains, but also there are critical supports. Without the data, surveillance, and information from the burden document, from the state oral health plan, the coalitions, you know, would be really sunk. So their roles may take a little bit more of a kind of defined path, but yet I think with leadership, and maybe, you know, actually I think it was Chris and I who were talking about this, maybe that's an area that you start doing some leadership skills building at the workshops and so forth, because it is a real issue. You don't want to, you know, not talk about it, because coalitions have become very strong, powerful entities in and of themselves. So I think that's an area that, you know, it makes sense to talk about in and show examples of how that leadership works collaboratively.
I'm thinking about the double therapist discussions we've been having here and seeing if a coalition comes forward and is wanting to move that and other areas forward, but within the state oral health structure, the Department of Health may not be supportive of that workforce development model and, you know, how that stands.
Do you want to comment, Chris, as a former, oh, Dr. Chris, as a former dental director?
Well, we supported developing state oral health coalitions with the intent that they eventually become self-sufficient, 501c3, and find other funding sources as they mature and evolve. We think that the state oral health program needs to be in that mix at the table, able to assist them with data to help them make more informed decisions, but also so they'll appreciate the role of the state oral health program as a key component of moving oral health forward for the state, and not something that is easily chopped off when there's a budget crisis. So we think it also plays into sustainability for the state oral health program as well. I think most of them have tried to at least initially focus on areas where there is common ground and leave the contentious issues in the parking lot, at least for the time being, until they get more comfortable working through issues among themselves and finding common approaches that they can agree to. So I don't think any of them have really dived into the therapist issue, but it may be coming.
Can I say one more thing quickly? Is that all right?
One of the things that we found from the sealant white paper, the findings of that, is how important it is when you have a state oral health director who is really a creative leader, how important that is in advancing the issues, just crafting the memorandums of understanding. In Wisconsin, for example, the ability to partner with one of the nonprofits there to basically create a deal so that sealants can go forward. I'm not sure that we talk about that enough and show those examples. And the that's separate entirely. The coalition supports that, but it really is the creativity of the state oral health program that's making these, getting the data together, crafting these agreements, that's really moving the engine forward. So I think we can talk about that more, and it will definitely come out in the sealant white paper.
One other thing I didn't mention in talking about the state oral health plan is that's one of the key things that particularly in the first few years our states have had the coalition focus on. And the intent of the state oral health plan is not for it to be a plan for the state oral health program, but a more broad state plan for oral health for the state. And you can't do that without getting a broad group giving you perspectives and input and raising issues that you can then come to some consensus about what should be in that plan that not only the state oral health program can contribute to progress, but other outside partners and organizations in the state.
I just wanted to add one more thing, that in some states it's been really challenging for state dental directors because there may be four or five different oral health coalitions in their state. There may not be just one, so they're going to have to interface with all of those. They may be very topic-specific, like early childhood or whatever. They also need to interface with the other health coalitions or educational coalitions in the state or whatever. So they're kind of going to a lot of meetings and convening a lot of meetings, and they have to really be in sort of a neutral role in some instances. A good example is in Alaska with the state dental director there during everything going on with the DHATs. And he was very, very careful and displayed really good leadership skills during that whole process. So, I mean, each state is kind of different that way, but it's particularly confusing when you have a lot of different coalitions you have to deal with.